Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, survivors, caregivers, and all of our listeners who are tuning in to the TBI One Love podcast, which, as you know, is spreading our positive form of hope, inspiration, and education to those that have been touched by a brain injury, as well as awareness and prevention to the general public. To wrap up our August series, hard to believe we're already here, we have such an inspirational guest. And I know everyone's going to be very excited not only to hear from her, but also to learn the guidance that she has to share. Who I'm referring to is Dr. Veronica Garcia. She is from Spain, but living in Switzerland, and is a physical therapist with two masters. That's right, not one, but two. One is in neuroscience, and the other is in neurological rehabilitation. She also has a PhD in augmentative reality and neurorehabilitation as well. She has clinical experience mainly acquired while she was working in Spain with neurological patients with different pathologies, such as strokes, multiple scoliosis, Parkinson's, and of course, traumatic brain injuries. In Italy, she worked with multiple scoliosis, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, listeners, patients as a research effort for her PhD, which was focused on studying the efficiency of different exercises using augmentative reality versus the conventional therapy by analyzing different parameters in order to measure the improvement and in upper limb movements, balance, and also dual tasking. She is also a professor from 5 years in two master programs, neurological, physical therapy, and bioengineering. Currently, Dr. Garcia is working in Switzerland. She's originally from Spain, but calling in from Switzerland. And she is a clinical manager in a med tech company, which is dedicated on the development of robotic devices used for physical recovery in neurological patients. I know that's a lot I listed, but she is very inspiring and done a whole lot of work. Plus, she is really making a big change and understands how brain injuries can be adjusted and how much trouble they can be as well. So without further ado, let's get this inspirational story started, especially when she's calling in from Switzerland. Dr. Garcia, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Dr. Garcia, thank you for calling in tonight and, most importantly, all you've done.
Yeah, thank you so much for the nice introduction and for the opportunity to be here to share.
Well, thank you. You know, and as you, with your work and understanding personally the impact of physical therapy, I'm just curious, does the role of physical therapy in recovery for neurological patients, could you explain more about that, please?
Yeah, sure. So, in the majority of professions, we know what they do, right? We know what doctors, nurses, surgeons, policemen, teachers do. Usually we hear physical therapy and we think about massage, osteopathy, relax. Maybe if you have often been in a physical therapist or PT session, maybe you don't remember that experience as very relaxing, right? Indeed, when you have physical pain, some manipulation practices can hurt a little bit in our body. We all know that pain when we pass the fingers in a muscle contractor, right? So many people have asked me how physical therapy can help people with neurological damage. It has not been only one time that I've heard. So you do massage to them to let them walk again. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, I thought like, oh my God, what he or she just said, right? Does he or she think I do some kind of magic with my hands? But when you hear it several times, you think, well, maybe there is something missing in our job if we do not know how society can understand our role better. So to answer this question, which is not easy in a few words, of course, but I will try. So let's think about how the brain and muscles are connected. We have the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. The central mm-hmm. one is the part that thinks and elaborates the answers in front of the stimulus. And the peripheral one is the one that executes what the central just decided. So for example, and this was the first example I heard in my life at school when I discovered the nervous system. Imagine we go to the bathroom and we open the door and what do we see? We see a lion. So what do? You run, right? In a millisecond, your body from the senses tells your brain there is a lion. And the brain, for different other reasons and knowledge, identifies the lion as a risk for your life. Mm. So the brain says to the muscles, go away.
Mm.
So keep this example in your mind, okay? We will come back in a minute. So let's go back to the what we can call normal PT, so physical therapies we all know. So for example, I broke my elbow and I have to go to some physical therapy session and do different movements during therapy. So my physical therapy is going to prescribe me some exercise. Like for example, let's make it simple, flex extension of the elbow, which is going to change, being adapted to my progress, like the weight, repetitions, etc., taking into consideration the principles of physical exercise. But imagine now that my elbow do not flex and extend, not because it has been broken from a traumatic injury, but my brain had some damage that affects the mobility of my elbow. Well, so what neurological physical therapy do here? Can we do the same that the other patient with a broken elbow? Let's say yes and no. So yes, because no, because the damage is in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
In the central nervous system, the one which we already said is the responsible of elaborating the answer from our body to the environment. So it is important to move the elbow, but the brain do not understand about isolated muscles, but about functional movement. So in neurological PT, we are not just going to do movements, but give a sense to that movement. We still follow the principles of the physical exercise, of course, but without forgetting the motor learning principles. So we, as PTs, physical therapists, we look for that flex extension on the elbow, but we do not say to the patient, do this movement, but take the glass in front of you and drink, which is a flexion of the elbow, and leave it on the table again, which is an extension of the elbow. So functional movement. So coming back to the example of the lion, why do we run if we see the lion in the bathroom? Because the brain says this is a threat, so run. But the brain does not say, look, you're going to move now one leg, one the other leg, and then one and the other very fast, right?
Mm.
So coming back and answering the question, I warned it was not easy, what is the role of physical therapy in the recovery of neurological patients? It is not about letting people walk again after a neurological damage with massages, but train their brain on their muscles to work properly together again.
Wow. That's not only great information, but also some great examples of how the difference works with PT, but also most importantly, the difference between, I like the examples you gave with arm movement and of course with the brain when the lion in the bathroom. That is great. Wow. So
yeah,
we already know. Yeah, they're great examples. So with those examples, we already know about the important role of PT in the patient rehabilitation process. But I'm sure our listeners would like to get this answered or just learn more. With neurological PT work, and if it does work, who is it with?
Yes, so this is a very, very interesting point. But maybe to answer this question, I should ask, in which condition, right? As a clinician, as a researcher, so we can include neurological PT that teach, and now also medtech industry are also including their knowledge and their experience to help in develop new technologies to help clinicians as well as patients into their daily rehab routine, right? So maybe let's see how the work of a PT is being clinician, right? First of all, the clinician one. So as it is the majority of the cases. The neurological PT works or should work in a multidisciplinary team together with OTs, also occupational therapists, neurologists, nurses, logopedists, neuropsychologists, nutritionists, for example. So the clinician's neurological PTs can work in an inpatient clinic or hospital or in outpatient centers. But what is the main difference between these two aspects? So if the patient is staying there or he, she goes only to the center for his rehab sessions, right? So to generalize, we can see more acute and severe patients in inpatient centers and more chronic in mild patients in outpatient centers.
Okay. So with those two, what would you say is the main difference between them?
So if they are, as I was saying, if they are staying in the center, they are inpatient centers. So the patient is practically living there. And the outpatient centers is you go like ambulatory sessions, right? So you live in your home and you go some hours during the day to these centers.
Okay, perfect. What is or should be the workflow of a therapy in neurological patients?
Oh, so let's say also like about how is the progression. We have to see also the progression. So the workflow is really important. So let's say that it is not more complicated than to check any other thing in life. So you test, you do something, and you test again to see the difference from before. So something that we all have done at some point in life, want to lose some weight, it does not matter what for, how much or for how long. But for example, tell me something. When, for example, you want to lose some weight, what do you normally do?
Well, I weigh myself.
Exactly. So, and what do you have, for example? So, if you weigh yourself, what is the feedback you have from that? Like you have,
Like the numbers, we have pounds.
Okay, and for example, well, in here, for example, I would say kilograms, but it's always a number, right? So, let's remember this and. Once you weigh yourself, what are the things that you choose to do to lose some weight?
Eat healthier, maybe also weigh the quantity of pasta.
Okay,
or foods.
So what do you have here again? A number, right?
Yes.
Okay, and what more would you do, for example?
Weight would be continue to change like eating or work out more, be more active, sports, etc.
Exactly. Okay. And for example, which one would you choose?
Probably running.
Okay. And imagine you are opening your house door, okay, to go out for running. What do you do if you do something? I don't know if you put maybe some music on your headphones or if you open some app for running, for example.
Yes, I would track my exercise, you know, with smartphone or the watch.
Okay, and can I ask what for?
Of course. Well, I track it to see not only how much I did, but also using the data to see the velocity of the ups and downs so I can see the difference between days of if it's not only, of course, the time I'm putting in, but if it's improving or not.
Yeah, so actually, with your answer, you just summarized what is important in a clinic as well as in research, so quantitative data. We all, after a diet, weeks of sports and eating healthy, we would love to see 5 kilograms less or pounds on the scale, right? And three would be better than only one to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is also important, not only in research for a statistic, but also in clinics. And maybe you are wondering why. Well, for the reason we just mentioned. So first of all, to motivate the patient to see actually their improvement. We all want to see the results of our efforts. And also the therapist can really track the progress of their patients, which makes therapy worth it. If we do not see changes with data, we don't know what things in therapy need to change. So at, in the end, adapt the therapy to their needs, because this is the key of success. Then we also have the research field. So this was more about why it's important in clinician, but also in the research field. So sometimes it seems that the clinic and research field are very detached from each other. But for the sake of optimal results in our technological advances, clinical and research practice should go hand in hand. Currently, studies show there is an average of 10 years of elapsed time for a new method or technique to be fully rolled out in the clinical practice after it has shown its efficacy during the study. Of course, this is not good news at all, or it should be. But however, this is something that is changing thanks to new technologies and the research that proves their efficacy in neurological therapy. And this is also something that medtech companies have echoed, changing not just the results, so not just the assessment, but also the therapy. Not only the end goal, but also the journey to get there. Personally, I see clinicians, researchers, and medtech companies looking in the same direction. And being a vocational physical therapist as I am is something very, very rewarding, because when we all act for a good cause with such common shared goals, the patients are the ones benefiting the most with the best results and a fast recovery. Avoiding long periods of rehab is also important for the families, minimizing the ups and downs of their beloved during their rehab process, for example.
Wow, yeah. You know, and recently you had presented, and we also discussed, you know, your PhD about AR. Would you mind saying why AR or VR can be improved with the rehabilitation in neurological patients?
Yeah, here was the next question. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I know you got a lot going on, but I was just curious, you know, with that improvement that you said, and it's crazy, you know, having that be studies showing that it's on an average of 10 years elapsed, and, you know, with the power of technology, I've seen a lot of improvement with different rehabilitation stations, not all, or locations, not stations, I'm sorry, getting involved in virtual reality. So, you know, with your passion and your expertise, I just wanted to get your opinion on, do you think there can be more improvement with virtual reality with neurological patients? Or do you think that virtual reality is good? It's just kind of different with how some patients might be able to function and do any form of virtual reality, or their cognitive skills or any form of their injury might not be suitable?
Well, the VR and AR satisfy all the principles of motor learning. And these principles are environmental stimulation, feedback, positive and negative, also intrinsic and extrinsic, specificity, repetition, intensity, adaptability, and of course motivation. It is the key of the whole. So I've already mentioned many of these, like adaptability to the patient needs, repetition and intensity is something we have to do for everything we want to learn or train. without increasing repetitions or intensity. We do not learn or include these new movements as patients in our daily routine. And this applies to every kind of therapy, not only neurorehabilitation. Regarding the other principles, for example, in environmental stimulation, we have a huge range of scenarios to play with while we are moving or training in this game. Of course, with augmented reality or virtual reality, we cannot just improve body weight shifting, for example, which is normally the first step for balance during walking that we train. By taking something from, for example, the typical exercise is taking something from the right while I'm standing, if I'm the patient, and leaving it on the left side. But also, for example, while being imagined in virtual reality or in augmented reality, instead of just taking some things from one side and leaving in the other side, we are in this virtual reality in, I don't know, maybe in the middle of the sky, right? And we just have to pump in balloons everywhere they appear. So the patients, as you can imagine, are playing and not thinking about, okay, one repetition, two repetitions. They are actually playing and moving for a reason, for an objective. And what did we already mention? That brain does not understand about isolated muscles, but functional movements. So not thinking about my weight should shift from one leg to other leg, just have fun and pumping balloons.
Mm-hmm.
Also going to another principle of motor learning, feedback. So feedback is also important to know if I perform correctly or if I didn't, because we do not want to learn something wrong. Otherwise, we would have a problem, as we would take more time to forget or unlearn this wrong movement and relearn the right one. This both together, so environmental environment and also feedback with all the other principles are contributing to the motivation of the patient. As remembering one of my university teachers in my bachelor said, a motivated patient has already the 80% of the recovery success. So I would love to go deeper in all the benefits of augmented reality and virtual reality, but this topic can really take me a lot. So I don't know if you think this is interesting. We can repeat a postcard only for this in the future if there is some interest in between the audience. Because it is not only VR and AR, it's also about telerehabilitation and, for example, the importance of it as many patients that, for example, cannot go so often or they are far away from the centers, the therapy lands at their home. Something like if Mohammed doesn't go to the mountain goes to Mohammed, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, I would like to say at least maybe some key feature for the augmented reality. So I think the most important thing I would like to share is that professionals cannot just follow the trends. They must be aware about them. So
yes.
Please do not put VR glasses on the patients if you see some videos of physical therapists doing it to their patients. Please study how this should be implemented in your kind of patients, in which cases, ask professionals because they will be very happy to answer you. And of course, not every app for VR is good for them. When we talk about VR or AR in healthcare, we normally talk about the apps that were developed ad hoc for neurological patients. And here, engineers do an amazing job. The thing I like the most since I started in the research field is the collaborative work between clinicians and engineers. Because the important thing about the app here, I mean, the ones developed ad hoc for neurological patients is that you as physical therapy are saying for how long, which kind of exercise, where do you want the stimulus appear, what for, so you adapt the game totally to the patient. And it's not
exactly.
just playing, and that's it, because otherwise it's not worth it.
Exactly, I agree. Wow, and that's not only great information and inspiration, and of course, education that you've been sharing with our listeners, but it is really amazing all that you've done. And I'm just curious, before we wrap up this show, out of all the fields that you have mentioned, if you don't mind sharing, what did you enjoy the most, or do you think the most important between clinician, professor, research, and manager?
So, well, for sure, there is not a single one. I could not be a good researcher if I hadn't seen the needs and I didn't have the experience as a clinician. I would also not be a good teacher if I would, well, I hope I'm good, I don't know, but let's say yes, if I would not have asked myself while doing research, why this, what is the reason of that, does this make sense, and without all of this, I could not even be a clinical or scientific manager, because we should have an holistic view of the different aspects and points of view of rehabilitation. Maybe if I can just say something more, is there, if in case there is some PT or PT student that it's some point listening to this podcast, please do not feel less PT to be a researcher or less PT, physical therapist, or to be manager or even teacher. This is something I experimented a while, and I can just say if the a while ago, and and being a clinician, yes, you are in direct contact with the patients, you are helping to rehabilitate, but also being a researcher, without researchers you maybe would not be a clinician, because you cannot use some techniques if they have not been proved. Or being a teacher, you are actually educating future PTs that will help more patients. And also now as a clinical manager, you are part of a big team that develop new technologies to treat many patients around the world. And at the end, being a PT in such a different form, you are always helping patients in the rehab. So please never feel less PT for taking a different and less common path, and always think bigger.
Wow, thank you for answering that. But also, most importantly, thank you, Dr. Garcia, for sharing all this great information, hope, education, and guidance for those that are not only learning, but also, like you just had mentioned, those that are in this field, either beginning or have been long time. This has been a great source of motivation and continuing inspiring them, letting them know that they are doing a great job and really making a big difference between clinicians and engineers, and most importantly, the patients.
Exactly. Yep.
And I know I've been asking you a lot of questions and just giving you the floor to really explain more about your passion. I just want to ask you before we wrap this show up, do you have any questions for me?
Well, maybe if, it's a really nice job what you are also doing. I was hearing a lot of podcasts the other days, and it's a really impressive experience that you also share from patients and also from professionals. And I was thinking if maybe you have some kind of way to get information about how patients or caregivers or family maybe they are interested in something. If you some kind of way to know if they are interested in something, I don't know, maybe more in psychologist part or physical therapy or logopedy. So maybe, in case you have more interest that I can help, for me it would be appreciated to... If I know, of course, I don't know. Everything.
Of course, but no, that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that. And what is most important, and this goes, and I know everyone will agree with this, especially you with your line work, there is always going to be in need a continuous source of guidance for brain injuries, not only because, mm-hmm. unfortunately, they happen all the time to anyone, anywhere, but most importantly, how when you meet someone that has a brain injury, you just met only one brain injury, because even if they're damage to the same area of the brain, or if they have just similar situations during the recovery, mm-hmm. no brain injuries match. So every caregiver, every survivor, everyone in the medical field, in the counseling field, always has the ability to address different techniques that will help brain injury survivors during their journey, but also will help educate others of situations that they can either use in their own life or share with others. Mm-hmm. So if we can ever do some more guidance from you, that would be amazing.
Yeah, sure. Especially with cellular rehabilitation going farther, I think it's always good news.
I agree. Well, Dr. Garcia, I know you're very busy on the other side of the world, but I want to thank you once again for not only being on tonight's show, but most importantly, allowing us to stay in touch and you sharing all these great facts and guidance for everyone. And by everyone, I mean survivors, caregivers, medical field, counselors. You have a wide range of education and inspiration. So thank you personally for all you do, the lives you change, and giving us the opportunity to have a discussion tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate also the opportunity to be here. So thank you a lot.
No problem, Dr. Garcia. Thank you. Have a great rest of the month. It's hard to believe we're about to be in September, but most importantly, let's keep in touch and we'll do some future work together. And I'll make sure, like we were discussing, not only to send people your way to view more of your research guidance, but also we'll do your demonstration with There's a Lion in the Bathroom. Well, thank you once again, Dr. Garcia. I really appreciate your passion.
Thank you. Thank you.
No problem. Wow, everyone. What a great show that was to wrap up our August series. As you heard, Dr. Garcia gave some key elements that are very positive and helpful for anyone that has either been touched by a brain injury or, most importantly, learning about the abilities for brain injuries with PT or neurological PT. So if you would like to learn more about her guidance, education, or have any questions that you would like to ask her, especially if you're in this field of work, please contact TBI One Love and we'd be happy to try to connect you. Visit us on all forms of social media and, of course, continue working with us to change the lives of those that have been touched with a brain injury and, most importantly, ending the silence. One Love.